Welcome to The Future and You. Ideas and opinion about the future based on verifiable facts of today. This episode is for September 18, 2013. I am your host, Stephen Ewan Cobb. This is part two of our interview on The End of Retirement as We Know It. Our guest is Michael Nuschke. Michael Nuschke is a professional retirement planner who is also a futurist and life extensionist. His website is retirementsingularity.com, and the motto at the top of his webpage is Retirement Planning in the Age of the Singularity. By combining his profession with his futurism, he has written a report entitled The End of Retirement as We Know It. This report is available as a free PDF download from his website. I've read it. It's excellent. In my interview with Michael, we discuss his report at length. We cover his assessment of how things are changing and his advice which you can use to improve your personal future. Here's a paragraph I plucked from his website. Quote, I specialize in retirement income planning, how to ensure you don't run out of money before you run out of life. This gets tricky if you live well past age 100 in good health. As a retirement futurist, I am here to help you understand what your future will be like and make the best of it both financially and lifestyle-wise. Unquote. This interview was recorded using Skype on August 31st, 2013. This is the second half of his interview. The first half was in last week's episode. Here is Michael Nuschke.
On page 30 of your booklet, The End of Retirement as We Know It, it gives a listing, the new six-step recipe for your future. All of these things are really vital to a forward-thinking plan. The number one was reframe retirement, which you just mentioned. The one that really I think is most confusing to people would be number four, and that is invest in your human capital. I want to cover all of them, but that's the one I'd like to talk about next. The concept of human capital, if you would, describe that a little bit.
Yeah, human capital is essentially the value, financial generating value of a human being. So if you are young and have just gotten a job, you have a huge amount of human capital because your earning capacity during the rest of your life is really high. Now, if you're approaching retirement and you're only going to be working for a couple years, you could say your human capital has gotten very low. So it's kind of basically the ability to earn money. So, you know, the ability to earn money, we think of that in terms of our financial security. It diminishes the older we get because we think that we're getting closer and closer to not working anymore. And therefore, what we call the human capital has gone down and will approach zero. So the fourth step in this kind of this recipe formula, the word recipe, the I stands for invest in your human capital. And what I mean by that is that going forward, I think we'll continually need to retrain ourselves and spend money or spend time and energy in developing our capabilities. And that is because we're going to be around a lot longer. And secondly, it's because the capabilities that we had in the past might be obsolete in the future, in the world of the future. So investing in your human capital is another way to say it is continual learning, you know, which I think people can relate to, is that the kind of philosophy or psychology of always wanting to learn, be curious, be looking into things. Here I'm talking about, well, more to do with how you could earn money. Because now the idea of stopping working may not be the right idea. It may be that we take some time off and then we retrain ourselves. We invest in our human capital by taking courses, reading books, getting mentoring, coaching, whatever it might be, to prepare us for chapter two or chapter three or chapter four of our livelihood or whatever it might be in the future.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that kind of segues into number five, P, plan your next livelihood. I have changed careers several times in my life, but I don't know that everyone has. My father didn't. He was the same thing his whole life. What would you say to encourage people about planning their next their next livelihood.
Okay, so let's take it in two ways. I think you're right. There are a lot of people who've already gone through a lot of job changes, and then there are a lot of people who haven't. Especially those people that are probably approaching retirement now are more likely to be in the latter camp, where they may have had the same occupation in a business or a corporation for their life, and now they're approaching retirement. So the fifth step, called plan your next livelihood, is the idea that we should look at maybe the closing of this chapter isn't the end of the book. So the next livelihood is the next chapter. So the next chapter would be what, and here I would say, like a lot of people say, if you're going to do something further in terms of earning an income after whatever career it is you have right now runs its course, what's it going to be? And so you want to start planning that. If you have a job now, plan it before you have given up your current occupation. Let's say that you're working in a company and you're approaching retirement and you're going to have some level of pension. Well, in my opinion, you should really take a inventory of what really would be interesting for you to do sometime in the future. It doesn't have to be immediately, but sometime in the future that would really capture your imagination, your passion, your energy. That if you get up in the morning and you start going to that type of work, you would not really think of it as work. And that's what I really think is the important thing, is to really, a lot of people are in jobs and they've stuck with jobs or in businesses because I'm almost ready to retire and I can't change even though I don't like my job. So it's like I'll just struggle on. Or, you know, maybe people are only say 40-ish, whatever, and they still think they're 20 or 30 years away from retirement and they already don't like their job. And that's not unusual. And so what I would say is start planning the livelihood now that you want, that you would find interesting. The reason why it's possible now is because of technology. We can pretty much access all of human knowledge on the internet. And so we just have to kind of understand that the tools that are available to us to both find out about things and also train ourselves are available mostly through the internet for very little or no cost. And you know, as I'm referring to things like Khan Academy and Coursera and many, there's dozens of universities that have put free training courses, you know, college level courses right online for free that you can actually start into and get a really good sense of a new field and start training yourself. And whether or not you ever go to any kind of formal, person-to-person education is not necessary. You don't have to kind of make that commitment. You could actually start thinking about it before you give up your current income. So the idea of planning your next livelihood has to do with really taking an inventory of where you are, what you would really like to do, and spend some time accessing the incredible amount of information we have in order to help you figure that out. Now, that's easier said, perhaps, than done for a lot of people, because they say, well, I'm in this job. I've done this for my life. I don't know anything else. You know, I don't know what else I can do. Well, that's where things like career counselors, believe it or not, or even if you're, you can go to a career counselor even while you're working. Or you can, the actual occupation called life coaching has come up and is very, very big and very easy to find life coaches, be it both one-on-one life coach or a online version of that. And I really think in the world of the future, life coaching will be like your family doctor because of the changes that will be occurring will be so rapid that you'll really need to access somebody who has an occupation of helping people understand what's occurring and also help them understand about themselves, what kinds of things are, what they're good at doing, what, you know, help you understand your passions, and also what you could do livelihood-wise in the future. So a life coach, I think, is a really amazing and appropriate type of occupation, which has sprung up fairly recently. But it makes a lot of sense. I've used life coaches a couple times just to help me with the various kind of transition periods in my life. They're always very, very good. You know, there's a whole industry of life coaching, and there are professional designations in life coaching where people do get trained and helping people draw out from themselves what it is important to them, what will be energizing and interesting to them, and what kind of fields they could actually develop a skill in the future that they would look at not as work, but something they would actually feel engaged in.
Yeah, the idea of a life coach is really a fascinating one to me. I've never talked to one, never met one, never interviewed one. I have sort of been an amateur life coach for my own self.
Yeah, I guess.
But every time I ask myself, what is it I really want to do and where do I really, you know, where are my passions? I think, oh, I want to do my show more.
Yeah, right.
Which, because I enjoy asking questions, picking people's brains and learning new things.
Yeah.
And so I'm wondering, there must be a variety of life coaches. I mean, some must have certain, I don't know, I don't want to say focus, some more towards job or some more towards spirituality or whatever. Is there can you characterize them in some way for those unfamiliar?
Yeah, you know, I really don't, I don't know. I mean, I'm not a life coach and I haven't been trained in them. I actually know, I know somebody as a good friend who's a life coach, and I've also used two different life coaches myself, and they've had different trainings. But I think it's, I think almost every life coach offers a free first hour so you can get a feel for that person, whether they understand it. Now, what I'm talking about primarily is the idea of really pulling out from you what you really find of interest that will really kind of make your livelihood something you really want to do. And, you know, just like you were saying, you know, you like this kind of interviewing thing and it really engages you. And I really love the whole merger of what I'm doing right now in terms of my work in retirement planning joined up with looking at the future and singularity, et cetera. To me, it just, you know, I can spend hours a day at it because I'm just energized by it. I just find it continually fascinating and interesting as to how it's evolving and how, and what will happen. And so that's what you're looking for, is something like that, that really, that whatever it is for you. And that's a life coach, I think, in general, there are all three of the coaches that I know have been very good at that. They've been trained in how to ask questions, really. It's mostly about asking questions and helping you think about your life, yourself, and where what you want to do. And that's, I think that's really helpful to have somebody else do that. And I wasn't convinced of it. I'm really somebody, it's mostly kind of does my own stuff, kind of on my own. And but I thought, I read about it and I thought, well, you know, there's probably some benefit. And I was quite surprised. It really was helpful. There are certain exercises that they might ask you to, you know, imagine the kind of idyllic world that you'll be in 10 years and kind of actually describe it using your senses. Close your eyes and think about, where will you live? You know, what will your relationship be like? What, you know, what will you eat in the morning? And, you know, these are kind of techniques that they've discovered are helpful to really help people pull out from themselves certain things that they may not even know about themselves. So if you don't already have a passion and interest, and you may already have something that's a hobby or something that you really like doing, and a lot of people will dismiss it as a possible income source, but it's not true. You know, if you're if you like making beer, you know, that's, you can actually develop that into either a blog about beer making and my experiences with beer or whatever, or you could focus on a particular part of the technology of beer making, and you know, there's a zillion different ways that every interest could be developed into a source of income. So it's it really is. Mostly it's self-limiting. We don't realize that we can do something that we really enjoy and are engaged in. And if you're in such a thing, that's great. I mean, so this step number five, it has to do with more traditionally that a lot of us think that we have a career and we're about ready to kind of stop that. And now what's next? You may already be in an occupation that will continue for life and be kind of re-energizing by itself. Who knows?
Yeah, I can imagine that a lot of people, I'm very, what do they call it, introspective. And so a lot of people who are introspective believe they're already aware of all their passions. But very often you could be missing the, what is it, the forest for the trees?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's true. I mean, I've had a lot of training and in meditation. I've actually been a kind of serious meditator for over 30 years. And I'm also a meditation instructor. And that is has helped me kind of see how I limit myself through how I think about things, like not just what I'm thinking about, but how I think about things. It still means, though, that I understand that it's there. It doesn't mean that I can unravel myself by myself. And so there's always a place for having a third party that offers a different perspective and helps you think about or talk about things that you thought you understood, but oftentimes we are quite surprised by what we find.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Number two, elevate health-related activities. Now, this is not just for the goal of feeling better, but it's also sort of a bridge to life extension as well, isn't it?
Yes, exactly. I mean, you know, you referenced the term bridge, and you're probably referring to Kurzweil's kind of model. Mm-hmm. Where are these three bridges? The first bridge is maximizing everything we can do now that's available in the medical world to make us healthier. The second bridge would be the full kind of blooming and of biotechnology, which are things like stem cells and genetic therapies, et cetera, which are coming along and can be quite. We're not just talking about slowing aging, we're actually talking about reversing aging, rejuvenation. And the ultimate third bridge and I mentioned this framework in the report, is the third bridge is the advent of nanotechnology. Nanotechnology down the road, probably 20 years, 25 years down the road, where it will be at the point where we'll have interventions from a health point of view, where we'll actually have these little tiny nanoscale robots swimming around our bloodstream looking for any kind of problems like cancer cells or whatever, any kind of illness, and basically fixing it before it even starts to become a problem. So it's so that seems futuristic, but in fact, they already have prototypes of this kind of thing already happening and been using it with certain animal models, et cetera. So, but initially, there's a huge amount that we can do about staying healthy. Okay, so you know, why would you want to stay healthy? And I think that's important. A lot of people think, well, look at all, you know, aging is natural, and I'll die when I die, and you know, what's the big deal? Well, essentially, I think it's true that that one way that Aubrey de Grey talks about it is, he asks a room when he's giving a talk, who in the room would like to get Alzheimer's disease? And of course, nobody raises their hand, right?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
So, and then he says, "Well, who in the future thinks that they might want to get Alzheimer's disease?" And nobody raises their hand. And so, mm-hmm. essentially, it's basically what we're talking about is, if you have the capability of staying healthy or even getting healthier than you are now and maintaining that, don't you think you'll want to do that, or don't you think it's at least a good idea to have the option to stay healthy? And it'll be up to you to choose that. But usually I would suggest that if it's available, you'll probably want to stay healthy. You know, I want to live a good another day of life. And, you know, even people that are in their 90s and even hundreds, they often, you know, they're not people that, I mean, for many, you know, there are some that are in pain and in declining health that would be happy to exit soon. But most healthy older people say, well, yeah, I want to keep living. So, you know, what makes it any different for you? So a lot of people think that they will reach a point when they won't want to live. But that's a conceptual framework, which I think is inaccurate, that we have. And so it's really a kind of attitude or a concept problem that a lot of the thinking about anti-aging and life extension has. It's not so much living long, it's actually just staying healthy. And initially, we can proactively stay healthy by taking advantage of a lot of the stuff that's available. The idea of how long we live, currently, the thinking is it's 80% of what we do, and only about 20% having to do with our genetics. Even the genetic part will be accessible in the not-too-distant future, where we can already get genetic genetic studies on ourselves from a company like 23andMe, which is a company that is on the internet. You can just look up 23andMe and send away for a little kit, and they'll do a analysis of, I think it's close to 200 different important genes from your saliva that will help you understand your predisposition to get certain diseases. And so if you have a high predisposition for this illness or whatever, it might change your behavior. You know, you might, because it, you know, a lot of medical science says that, well, even though you may have this predisposition, if you follow this diet regime or stay in this level of health, you'll essentially be normal in terms of your probability of getting it. So the idea is the technology is becoming more and more available for us to be able to understand how to stay healthy. We just need the motivation and understanding that it's there to actually do something about it. We have to be more proactive with our health. And that then, of course, means that if we stay healthy enough, and I think if we stay reasonably healthy for 15 to 20 years, there will arrive technologies which will allow us to treat most illnesses and rejuvenate many of the problems of aging. And it might be longer than that, but essentially, I think the farther we go, the more time we could buy by staying healthy and paying attention to the advances that are occurring in science and medicine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one of the things I like about your report is on page 34, there's 12 action steps, concrete things that you can start doing right away. And one of them is find a doctor who is conversant in preventive medicine and get your baseline tests done. As I was reading that, I was thinking about my doctor. He actually does this. He doesn't emphasize it as strongly as he might, but he does it whether I'm, ask for it or not. And I'm wondering how many doctors really stay on top of that kind of stuff, or if they're really reacting to what goes wrong only.
Yeah, well, that's the model. The problem there is the medical system, the medical model, which is treating ill disease as opposed to preventing illness. And then secondly, it's also partly the blame of like pharmaceutical companies that essentially are financing the whole illness model. Of how many drugs can I prescribe to treat this symptom, treat that symptom, as opposed to dealing with the actual, fundamental problems of aging. So it's really a systematic problem. So, but it doesn't mean you can't yourself do something about it. And I would say, my guess is most doctors don't think that way because they weren't trained that way, and it's just not the way the system works. So there are doctors that are more into that, and there are other doctors that aren't. It's almost like you have to train your own doctor. And I would recommend a very good book on this, which was actually Ray Kurzweil and Terry Grossman had a book called Transcend. You might know it. And that book really does delve into, in more specifics and great detail, the types of medical tests and how to track them and the various levels you could have, and in probably much more detail than most doctors would think of doing. And the whole idea here is it's a mind shift. The idea of the mind shift is we don't have to age. There are these processes of aging which are going on, but we can actually do something to slow them down and eventually stop them or reverse them, repair them. And so, but it takes some doing. It's not part of the system right now. The system right now is wait till it breaks down, fix some of the problems until the whole thing is gone, as opposed to keeping it going. And I kind of take the example of a car that's really kept up by somebody who loves that car, and they will continually replace the pieces which are going bad, but the car runs as well as it does when it was first created. Now, some people don't believe that's possible, but I would say why not? Because essentially, it's a much more complicated machinery we're dealing with, which is the human body, but it is a type of machinery that we're understanding more and more. We're not there yet for sure, but we're certainly at a point where we can really understand how to apply the oil here and there, how to change the brakes, etc., to actually help us make the instrument last a lot longer. Now, in my opinion, so you don't have to be a fanatic about trying to live forever. Or all we're talking about here is the attitude or approach to health should be proactive. And that will help you enjoy your life, whether or not you live to what we call a normal life of 80 or 85, or a radically extended healthy life of whatever it is, 150 plus. And so a lot of people think that's impossible. But, we 100 years ago, we only lived to like in our 30s. And so if you go back to that time and say, oh, people will live till they're 80 and they'll still be hiking around and playing tennis, they'll think you're crazy. So it's things change, and now they're going to be changing a lot faster.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, during the first couple of years of doing my show back, like say 2005 to 2007, I was trying to get people that I was interviewing to express how they're changing what they do, their day-to-day lives, their planning for the future and such, based on the idea of living really longer, much longer lives. And so I came up with a question, and I used it for several interviews. I remember Kim Stanley Robinson, I asked him about it, as well as a number of other people. I asked them, what would you do differently right away if you knew for certain that you were going to live to 300 years of age?
Yeah.
And naturally, they all paused for a moment, and Kim Stanley Robinson actually came up with some good stuff. He says, well, there are books that I would never have tried to write that I would write because they would take too long. He said, I like to climb, hike and climb mountains. And he says, in 300 years, I could climb all the mountains in the Sierra Madre.
Yeah.
And so he actually kind of embraced the concept, not necessarily that he would do it, but that this was something worth exploring as an idea, if nothing else. And so ever since then, I've wanted the answer to what should people do differently if they were going to live a very long time, not necessarily 300 years, could be 100 years, could be whatever. And so this interview and your report, The End of Retirement as We Know It, has finally given me that answer.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. I'm glad to hear that. Yeah.
So I was really excited to have you on the show. Before I let you go, though, let the listeners find out where they can learn more. Of course, they can find your report, The End of Retirement as We Know It, which is a free download on your website, which is at, if you would...
It's retirementsingularity.com. So, yeah, if people want to download the report or follow some of the articles I'm writing on this topic on the blog or on Facebook, mm-hmm. just I would suggest the easiest thing is to Google the name of the blog, which is Retirement Singularity. So singularity, in case people don't know, is singularity. So it's retirementsingularity.com is the name of the blog. But I also have a Facebook a site by the same name. So you would just go to Facebook, .com, and you just go /retirementsingularity, which is just one word. And happy to hear any, or happy to have people follow things there and provide feedback. I love feedback. And this is a really developing topic, and I think it really is important. One thing we didn't get into, and I really didn't develop it in the report, mm-hmm. is that the idea of people being healthier longer and likely working longer but still taking time off and enjoying their life has huge global financial benefits from the point of view of how it will affect the healthcare system as well as the pension viability of things like Social Security and altogether. So not only are people doing themselves a favor by taking advantage of staying healthy and looking at their lives over a longer span and doing the right steps financially, but also it could be the key thing that will help us get out of this huge debt crisis environment, which I think we're going to be under for many, many years to come. But essentially, the benefit of people being healthy means they draw less on the health system. And you might know that about 80% of a person's lifetime healthcare costs happen in the last couple months or last year of their life. So if that is pushed off, it really has a huge benefit. And secondly, if people continue to work longer, then it also helps a lot with the whole pension system. Mm-hmm. And again, the reason why people cringe at that notion is how they think about the term work. And that's why I think that it's important to look for something and start you know, redefining what that means for you, really kind of create your new chapter in life by spending some real time thinking about what would you really like to do that would actually potentially earn some money. So, I mean, that's those are some topics for perhaps a future discussion. But I really, really appreciate you having any interest in the topic, and I really open and invite anybody else to look into it as well.
Okay. Thank you. I sure appreciate taking time for the interview.
Thanks, Stephen.
That was Michael Nuschke. This was the second half of his interview. The first half was in last week's episode. One last note. Michael is working on a book. It will be a longer version of his free report and go into far more detail. If you search for it, understand that his last name is spelled Nuschke. Nuschke. You can learn more about him at his website, retirementsingularity.com. That's spelled RetireMentSingularity.com. Or using the links I've placed in the show's blog post, which is located at thefutureandyou.libsyn.com. Libsyn is spelled LIBSYN.
That's it for this episode of The Future and You. This program is licensed under the Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivative Works 2.5 license. A copy of this license may be viewed at creativecommons.org. Briefly, this means you may, indeed you are encouraged to, copy this entire program as many times as you wish and give it away to as many people as you wish. But you may not copy only a portion of this program, you may not charge anyone any amount of money for it, and you may not use any portion of it to make something new. On the other hand, anyone whose obvious goal is to recommend the show to others automatically gets special dispensation. Offline reviews, which include the show's website, may include brief quotes. And online reviews, such as for a blog or community group or webpage, which provide a conspicuous link to the show's website, may use as many quotes as they wish, up to and including a transcript of one half of any interview. The show's theme music is a blues number called Some Sympathy by Chris Jurgensen and is from his album Big Bad Son, which is available at magnatune.com. Magnatune is an independent record label that sells its catalog of music through online downloads and print-on-demand CDs. The company allows artists to retain full rights to their music and splits equally with an artist all the revenue from the sale of their work. All the music at Magnatune may be previewed free of charge, and customers can even choose how much they want to pay for the music, with pricing ranging from $5 to $18 per album. You can learn more about them at magnatune.com. That's spelled MAGNATUNE.com. If you have a theory or opinion about what the future will contain, be it the near future or the far future, you may email it to me at thefutureandyou.com. That's ME@thefutureandyou.com. You may also suggest topics that you would like to hear discussed, or send contact information for experts that you feel might provide valuable insights into the future. Mind you, an expert is not necessarily someone with an impressive degree. The best experts are the people who live or work or strive in the area under discussion. If the subject is science or medicine or academia, a degree is important. But if the discussion concerns trends in construction or firefighting or video gaming, a degree is pretty much meaningless. To get the inside dope, you've got to find the people who actually do this stuff every day. They are the first to see the trends because the trends have already begun changing their lives. As to the topics we will explore in the next episode of The Future and You, I can make no guarantees. Interviews are still being sought, recorded, and edited. All I can promise is that we will ruminate on the future. To learn more, check the show's website at thefutureandyou.com. If you enjoyed the program, please mention it to a friend, and be sure to join me again next time. Until then, I have been your host, Stephen Ewan Cobb. On behalf of myself and all my guests, I thank you for listening.